Well, hello everyone, and thank you for joining me. I'm Jill Bloom, group publisher of Building Enclosure, and thank you so much for joining me. I'm so honored and thrilled to be joined today by two gentlemen, Mike DeRuin, the president at Fitzgerald, and Charlie Seville, the principal and director of sustainability at Fitzgerald. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Jill. It's great to be here.
Thank you for inviting us this morning.
Can you tell me just a little bit about Fitzgerald? What does everybody need to know about what you guys do? You guys have tons of research, and as well as just you're so established in the architectural industry, but tell us about Fitzgerald.
Gladly. Thanks, Jill. Fitzgerald is an architecture, interior design, planning, sustainability firm. We have a long history, over 100 years in Chicago, Illinois, and we have always focused on how people live, where they live, and where they work. And that's where our firm focuses on, the design of all those spaces, anything you can work in, anything that you can live in, be that low-rise, high-rise, mid-rise housing, affordable senior housing. We cover the full gamut of all housing types, as well as all workplace types, whether it be new ground-up office construction or tenant improvements, whether they're small owners or Fortune 500 companies. We get the pleasure of working with so many different people and designing great spaces for them to live and work in.
Thank you for introducing me, Jill. I am a principal and director of sustainability here at Fitzgerald. And my role and part of our firm here is to work with the architectural environments and figure out how to make it in a sustainable, environmentally friendly way. And so that includes looking at everything from the experience of the individuals that are in our spaces to the materials in which they are built out of to the energy in which they consume. And my background is in architecture, like many of the individuals here, but it is also in energy engineering. And so being able to bridge this conversation about communication with our team members, it is really helpful to have people on staff that are good, strong individuals who can push forward these concepts and ideas. And so that's a little bit of my background.
And Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I've spent my entire career at Fitzgerald. I started here as a student intern, and now I'm a principal and president of the company. I've had the great career that has spanned all housing types. I've led those projects. I've worked on them from draftsman to project manager to principal in charge, and really enjoy helping developers and owners create new spaces for their residents. The challenge of creating new housing and creating mixed use environments is something that, you know, is really exciting to me. It's something that I really enjoy working with our teams on. And the integration now that we have working with Charlie and his sustainability knowledge, as well as his engineering knowledge here in house, just helps make that collaboration work just a little bit better because we're so much better integrated. I've spent my entire career here at Fitzgerald. And, you know, now I get the great pleasure of leading a whole new generation of architects and designers to be able to create those spaces for our next generation of clients.
Well, there's some pretty big things we got to talk about today, because it sure sounds like there are some changes in the energy codes, and I'd really like to dive into that with you guys. And it sounds like they're placing some strict limitations on the amount of glass that can be incorporated into new buildings. Can you tell us about that? What do all the architects listening need to know?
Well, it's interesting here in Chicago, across the country, a lot of the municipalities, if it's a city or even a local jurisdiction, is really moving forward and adopting energy codes that are based on IECC, or the International Energy Conservation Code, and the current year on that is 2021. That is being adopted across the country, and what happens is in municipalities such as Chicago, they adopt additional amendments. And in 2022, the city of Chicago started a code, or has a code in place, called the Chicago Energy Transformation Code. And the basis of that code is IECC 2021. But when you read through these codes of the different municipalities and cities around the country, you got to very close attention to the additional adoption or the additional things they are looking for you to do. And so this morning you talked about glazing or glass, and it's not really the reduction of glass, it's the reduction or paying attention to the vision glass on a building. And so as an example, the Chicago Energy Transformation Code, and I love this section, section C402413, orientation, is directly focusing on the limitation or evaluation of the amount of vision glass that you have on the east and west orientations of the building. So as an example, here in Chicago, most of our lots are orientated in that direction and our buildings sit in that direction. And so if you're going to be looking to do your typical building, you would be looking at reducing the percentage or the amount of vision glass on the east and west sides. There's different calculations. One is on the percentage of the glass. Another one has to do with the performance of the glass. But what's nice about it is the transformation code here in Chicago and most of the energy codes, they give you an out. And they allow you to perform a whole building energy performance model on the building, which then allows you to change the rotation and also the percentage of glass. And what that does is pushes you against the baseline. So you don't get out of it, but you can just add it in the performance of the building. Mike, is there anything you want to add about the transformation code? Because there's a different architectural issues
involved. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Charlie. There's a lot of other issues that get put into the energy transformation code in Chicago. A couple of key important ones are being electric ready. The same is true in Denver. They have an energized Denver code that has the same requirement for being electric ready, which is creating a lot of other change that we need to look at with our mechanical and electrical engineers about how we're using energy. In Chicago, they also added a requirement in the Chicago Energy Transformation Code to have thermally broken balconies. So no longer will you see integrated structure diving board balconies sticking out from a building. They have to be thermally broken with an R3 insulation thermal break. To me, that is going to create a lot of challenges for creating outdoor space, private outdoor space in many apartment buildings. So definitely some challenges that we're looking at in a lot of different locations due to these changes with the energy codes.
And just want to build on that real quick. Just Mike referenced the Denver Energize code in the city of Chicago. These are new. These pop up like in a 1 to 2 year cycle, meaning you find out about them and you have a few years or a time frame to adjust to them. And so when you are building larger buildings, something that we focus here, the multifamily buildings, high rises here at Fitzgerald and across the country, you don't build and design a building in 1 year. And so being aware of these types of future goals of cities and municipalities is very, very important when you go in for permit a year or so later, because you don't want to find out that you spent all this time designing it one way and you are not going to get approved another way. And so all of these codes and additions are looking at performance, glazing, electrification, and setting baseline or building performance standards. And it's beyond the energy code. So
got it.
Very interesting today.
So yeah, very interesting. There is no doubt. So guys, in your opinions, are the days of glass clad structures numbered?
Simple answer, yes. Long answer, maybe not. The restriction on the amount of vision glass really drives right at the heart of how well performing is your exterior wall from a thermal resistance perspective. And so while we might still have an all glass clad building, we may end up with a lot of spandrel glass in some locations, not vision glass, that is more thermally insulated on the backside of the structure or the backside of the window structure. Or in more low-rise, mid-rise type buildings, we may end up with more solid wall and more punched openings rather than a complete curtain wall or window wall type system that we've certainly gotten used to seeing over the last 10, 20 years. So I do think we're at that moment in time where the energy codes are going to make us take a real hard look at what is the architecture of housing going to look like going forward? And I think that over the coming couple of years, you will start to see a very significant difference in the way architects design buildings that are going to be in response to these more stringent energy codes, that we'll all be able to look back and be able to sort of date a building to say, oh yeah, that looks like a building from the early 2000s or the teens, and that building looks like it's from the 20s because it reflects a very different appearance to the inside resident as well as to the public from the outside.
So I'd like to add on to another side of that is when we're talking about glass buildings and buildings that may appear to be more glassy with vision glass, but these energy codes and performance requirements that municipalities and cities are putting out there, like in the city of DC or the district, Denver is too, what you are trying not to do is end up with a stranded property at the end of the day, meaning that a property that is degrading in value because it cannot no longer perform to meet these projected future EUI numbers. So we recently did a study here at Fitzgerald on a project to try to help a team look at. They just finished a multifamily high-rise building, and it had an EUI value, value up in the high 50s, which is good. It's right in line with the national average. And when we took that building, which has a higher percentage of glass on it overall in the range of 50 some odd percent, 60%, and when we reduced the percentage of glazing down to the standard of what the current energy codes are at and started to look at the insulation behind these walls that Mike was talking about, you can drive that EUI performance number down to 50 or even down into the 40s. So looking at the ratio of window wall and the type of insulation that you're putting behind the spandrel glass really can make a big important measure, but that still doesn't meet some of these building performance requirements. So you need to do more. It's just not about glass.
Sure. Well, I mean, speaking of that, though, does reducing the amount of glass, though, in a building help to reduce heating and cooling costs?
Directly. So if it's in a typical multifamily high-rise building, in the way that the systems would be designed, is the heating system for the building typically is centralized into a heat pump style vertical water system. And if you use less vision glass on a building and start to insulate these buildings with better insulation, the amount of energy that it takes to heat that loop or to interject heat into that loop is less. And so the best way of doing it is not to use the energy to begin with. And so, you know, it does help the building owners and the tenants to have more efficient buildings and put glass where glass is required or needed. And in the long run, having an experience that works for everybody that will have better heating and cooling costs. Do you want to add anything to that, Mike?
Yeah, thank you, Charlie. It's a direct balance between how much vision glass is right for the occupant, for the tenant, the resident, and how does that impact their feelings of living in the space. Wanting to rent a high-rise building is usually done because of the views. If we're going to limit the windows to something too small, it takes away from the attractiveness of living in a high-rise. Whereas in a low-rise or mid-rise type apartment, the expectation for full vision glass across the entire living space isn't necessarily the same. So the balancing question that we have to ask ourselves as architects and working directly with our engineers is, what's the cost balance and performance balance of needing to heat and cool a space, provide enough vision for the occupants, as well as how thermally insulated should that wall be? We're working with everything based on today's materials that are available to us.
Right.
And so trying to balance that cost is a challenge. There are some great technological advances that are being made with vacuum sealed insulated glass units that can provide really great high R values. They just don't come at a cost that most new developments can afford at the moment. So as that cycle changes, I think there'll be another shift in what materials get used, and it remains to be seen how that'll impact the architecture going forward.
Well, we know things are always changing, but with some of these changes though, Would you say that buildings are going to start to look differently with than they have in the past decade?
They might. The last time I remember being at this sort of precipice of change with the energy codes was right before the great financial crisis. And we were presenting a lot of different techniques of what we thought was going to be necessary to meet energy codes. And it was going to have an impact on how buildings were going to be constructed and what they were going to look like. It all sort of went away a little bit silently as we didn't do a lot to survive through those 3-4 years. But we're back at that point of significant change and really having to have some engaging conversations with owners and developers about what are these buildings going to look like and how are they going to perform. Talking about energy systems that we typically wouldn't talk about on the very first kickoff meeting because it's so critically important to the design of the exterior of the building. And how it can impact the load needed that Charlie's talking about and everything we can do to be able to drop the amount of load that's needed is going to have an impact on what the architecture is going to look like. I think there will be all kinds of great, fantastic new designs that are going to come out of this of different ways that we can approach the architecture. But the need is still there that inhabitable spaces, that's where people really want windows. And so it's going to come down to a question of what can those windows really look like and how do we best balance the living space as well as the need for vision, light, natural light to come into those spaces. And what is the building going to look like from the outside? There's only so many choices we have and what materials we can clad an exterior building in. And so how we use those is, you know, where we get excited about being able to create something new and different and see what the public thinks about it.
Well, that's what I'm looking forward to, those creative minds over there at Fitzgerald. And what are you guys going to come up with next?
I think it's also, Mike obviously is talking about the architectural side, and I'd like to spend just a minute talking about the sustainability side. One of the things we're doing here at Fitzgerald is we're developing a study to understand the livability of a multifamily residential unit because this is a term that everyone says, but we're really looking at the outside in and the inside out, meaning what does it look like from the outside? And then what does it feel to look back going from the inside out? And the true experience of what the residents is going to be feeling within this unit when they were accustomed to all glass buildings. And now this experience is going to change. And what also is occurring that Mike didn't allude to yet was the footprint of these units seem to be going smaller and smaller. And so we are actively looking at trying to understand the relationship of all of this and the residential experience or the residents' experience so that we can help our owners and teams and developers understand what we're creating and why. So I think from a sustainability and energy efficiency, it's all integrated together. It's not just going to be one answer anymore.
Well, for sure. And it's kind of like what you're alluding to. It's going to change how the occupants in those buildings live. It's like, are we going to have tiny homes and now in sky rises?
Right. That seems to be the trend. And you know, by limiting the amount of glass on an exterior wall, it actually helps because it improves the amount of wall area that you have to be able to furnish your unit. So there are some definite benefits that we see by reducing the amount of glass in some of these buildings. And overall, it should help everybody be able to live more comfortably. And that's sort of the goal of many of these energy codes is to improve thermal comfort of the buildings. And by having thermally broken balconies and having extra insulation in the exterior walls, there shouldn't be the cold spots that sometimes plague older structures at the outside perimeter where it feels too cold to be near the outside wall or too warm, depending on the season, time of day.
Well, those of us in the Midwest understand what that feels like, especially when there's always that one person with the space heater, right? And they're like, that's a fire hazard. You can't do that.
That's exactly right.
Correct. We're trying to get rid of those system, that idea, change the concept.
So as we balance comfort with natural light, with sustainability, like you guys have all been mentioning, what are the energy saving measures?
When we start a project and we were looking at it, we really spend a lot of time discussing with our owners that these are conversations that are new to them, is to make sure that they understand the thermal environments around the building. Which way does the wind come from? Where's the hot? Where's the cold coming from? What are the relationships to the surrounding buildings? So starting there and then moving towards the building itself, and understanding how to bring in the outside in, the natural light, maybe the air, the natural ventilation into a space to make sure that things are more comfortable. And in doing that, in Chicago, we have this big grid, and so it's very difficult at times. But looking at the building orientation, you know, we're not building in suburbia a lot of times where you can turn and rotate a building and do different things, but that's great. But when you build in very dense urban environments, which is preferred, you sometimes really need to think about how you orient the building, because that does represent energy savings and control of loads that we've already, you know, spoke about. So looking at orientation, window to wall, looking at thermal performance of the wall, the experience from the outside, the architecture and the inside outside, these are the beginning conversations of trying to get teams to understand, and those measures will go a long way. The energy then kicks in is what systems are you putting in? And we kind of talked and alluded about that. You know, those conversations, like Mike said, are starting to happen very early. It, you know, the same old architect and engineer puts in a system to help the architectural program. It's a program that needs to start from the very beginning now, and understanding everyone on the same team, integrated together, moving forward. Do you want to add to that?
No, absolutely. The, you know, one of the things that needs to be studied in addition to orientation is what is the solar impact of whatever the building design is? And how does passive solar shading impact the building and the energy need to heat and cool the building? And so we've started doing that early on now, where we actually take a very active look at how is the sun rotating across the building facade, and where is our best potential for some sort of solar shading that's built into the building facade in a way that it needs to be there so that it can't get value engineered, because it does have direct impact on the overall heating and cooling plants that then get sized for a building. So it's these kinds of really important aspects of coordination between the architect, engineer, and owner, not to mention the contractor, and how does cost play into all of this? We're having a lot more early conversation, asking some really hard questions about what are the potential impacts of some of these passive and active systems to try and improve building performance by reducing the plant size. So solar shading and doing that with the architecture of the outside wall is certainly one. Being able to have conversations about whether or not geothermal can have any impact. Where is the right location to be able to put the plants so that they can best serve different aspects and functions of the building, so that they're not running through unoccupied garage space, for example, in order to heat and cool something on the other side of that space. So having the planning and forethought of where some of these things go, they're not a given any longer. And I think that's part of what I was trying to allude to when I said we're on the precipice of a lot of change because of the energy codes. And these kinds of early conversations are so, so critical. And they're different from all the owners and developers that we work with than we've had in the past. And so it's a bit on education on our part to bring them up to speed as to why we have to have these conversations early, and taking a look at what kind of incentives there are for them to really embrace these codes and try and be a little more proactive in how can they create good energy savings without unnecessary cost.
And to support that, is these concepts would normally only be talked about high-performance buildings. Now they're talked about every building.
Yeah.
So the energy codes are in the envelope. All of this is pushing us to take these conversations and have them sooner and be able to educate and get everybody on board. No one's an expert in one thing. And so if you can bring to a project team with quality team members, and you can educate each other and your owner to have a successful project at the end of the day that they can build that's the important part. This isn't about studying, it's about building something. And I think that's where this is leading to. So I think that's something good to add.
Yes, definitely. It's a balancing act for sure, right?
Very much so.
Well, with all that said, you know, Mike and Charlie, how can architects adapt to these new codes, the standards, and the new ideas? Like, how do you adapt to all that? Sometimes you never know when it seems like codes change quickly.
We certainly experienced that. The Chicago Energy Transformation Code, we were given 30 days adapt to the requirements that are in them. And fortunately, we were able to do so. It's about being proactive and knowing what the code cycles are and staying in touch with those that are pushing for new and advanced codes, but also being proactive and looking out and trying to find either products or systems that can help address these different codes and the changes that go along with them. But it's also about having some really good relationships with engineers and contractors that we've worked with together to be able to bounce these ideas off of them and find ways to solve these problems before they become urgent, right? They're all very important, and they come about in different ways, and different sized buildings mean different systems, and how do we address the codes in different ways? And so some of the relationships that we've had for years and years and years really help us be able to draw on and get feedback from all the different people that are involved in the design and construction of a building. This goes down to the subcontractor level. So it's not just about us having good relationships with our GC partners, but it's also about their relationships with the subcontractors that work and design these systems as well, and getting their feedback about what's possible, what's easy, what's exotic and high performance and expensive versus what can be accomplished readily and somewhat easily to be able to take advantage of some of the energy conservation measures that we now need to study on every project.
So out of all of that, I'd like to say one word: communication. You gotta start talking to the whole team. No one is an expert in one area. So when a new code is coming out and talking about it, and having your teams that you interact with on a regular basis bring to the table what they found and when you find. And so understanding the language to be able to communicate back and forth and integrate together is, you know, and awareness is vital to addressing some of these changes. Because you may read it, we may read it one way, the engineer's going to read it another way, the contractor's going to read it another way. But if we talk about it, there's a high likelihood we'll get to a solution that our owners can adapt to.
Construction doesn't change easily. This is a very tried and true tradition sort of industry that likes to build on what we did last time and do it just a little bit better. And we're really being forced to think outside the box with these new codes, which challenges everybody to really have to be curious about how do we really do this best? And it is that communication with all of these different team members that we're talking about at a very early stage. And that's a very different game that we're all used to that is gonna challenge all of us to you know, try and do just a little bit better tomorrow than what we've done today.
Yep.
Well, it's always exciting to be challenged, right, guys?
Definitely. Keeps this industry interesting. It's why I became an architect. It's the ever-changing, ever-learning, ever-evolving aspect of how do you create a better place for people to live and work. That's what we get challenged by every day. That's what we really enjoy doing here.
I love it. So what else is coming down the road? Should we expect other energy codes like this in the future?
Yes, I have two things I'll say there, and they're all both very good ideas. Really measuring actual performance instead of predicted performance in buildings. A lot of, if you use DC as an example, and Denver's moving to this, it's great that you designed the building. It's great that you said this is what you're going to be able to do, but it's about proving it now. And so the industry is changing a little bit away from, oh, well, I predicted it, so it should be true, to actual performance. And that's what our owners need to know and understand better is that even when it's the glazing system, the window wall ratio, the HVAC, electrification, how do you meet the projected or future building performance requirements? The other side of this is the emissions conversation. You know, energy emissions are not the same thing, but you know, some people want to mix them together and understand what emissions means, and is it on-site emissions or scope ones or scope two emissions, and how are things being looked at? Because they change and people's perception of what's important changes as quickly as tomorrow is today. So that's what's in the future, I believe, of things that we have to really be conscious about.
No, I couldn't agree more. No building code has ever regressed. So I don't expect that in any way, shape, or form. Right. The two things Charlie mentioned certainly are the forefront of the conversation and what we see coming in the future.
Right.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for that great insight. And if anybody has any questions, though, where can people go to find more? What's the website there at Fitzgerald?
Our website's fitzgeraldassociates.net. It's a little bit of a long URL, but it does get you some great information, and it's got all of our contact information. We have offices, our headquarters here in Chicago, as well as an office in Denver, and certainly easy to find me on LinkedIn or on our website. Happy to talk to anybody with an answer any of these questions, because they're complicated, they're not easy, and they're well worth the conversation as early as possible on any project.
That's fabulous. Thank you so much. And if anybody has any questions for us, it's buildingenclosureonline.com. And while you're there, make sure you sign up for all our free content so you can stay up to date on our great podcasts and videos and our webinars. And you can sign up for our free e-newsletters so you can always stay up to date on all the great content we're putting out, just like we are today with Charlie and Mike. But most importantly, stay safe and healthy, and we can't wait to talk to you soon. Thanks again, guys.